You are tuned into Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
This evening as well, I'm joined by Irene Okoye. She is a business developer, brand marketing and strategist, communication specialist as well. Something that's really, really interesting when I found out about her, like I didn't know that she does that, but she will talk to us a little bit around that as well. She is passionate about working with people and advocates for the inclusion of women in the economy. This is very, very important, by the way, because you'd remember our discussion yesterday. We had Mrs. Mkwanazi from Girlcode, where they do a lot of women empowerment, specifically within the IT and tech, specifically also programming and coding, because that's an industry that's male-dominated. So to find people like Irene who are working in that space is a breath of fresh air, as it were, right? So Irene does a lot of inclusion of women in the economy with a career spanning over a decade. She has held various roles within the NGO and social enterprise sector. She is an experienced board member and has worked for various entrepreneur support, including the African Management Institute, before transitioning to her current role as the business development lead for Fetula, which is in Cape Town, I believe. She currently holds the role of a business development director, EMEA, at Upskills List, right? Whether working with corporates, SMEs, or NGOs, she strongly advocates for and believes in the development of human-centric systems, and most importantly, in supporting the creation of socially conscious and sustainable businesses that dare to challenge the status quo while solving real societal challenges. That is definitely a mouthful, Irene. Good evening.
Hello, Tipela. Thanks for having me on your show.
Thank you so much. I was like, where do I start, right? I was quite chuffed to hear that you also do a bit of business development. I think my and your interaction, where I know you as obviously in the business development space at African Management Institute, I was like fascinated to hear that you've also branched out.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like I've been in the entire sphere, you know, coming from supporting businesses, and also being at the forefront of, you know, providing marketing for those businesses, you know, and actually speaking on their behalf and hopefully supporting them with putting themselves out there. So I feel like I have had the whole 360 experience of what it feels like to start a business, what it feels like to get your product out there, sometimes get rejection, sometimes, you know, come back and look at your MVP and realize I still need to do some work here.
Certainly. I know that you've done quite a lot of work, of course, within the African continent as well, which is quite very interesting for me for this discussion as well, because we do have quite a lot of listeners in the African continent as well. But before we get into that, I mean, I've read your bio and it's easy to read a bio, but I thought let's hear it from yourself. If you were to tell our listeners out there a little bit about yourself, how would you define, or how would you, I know it's a very difficult question. Every time people are like, tell us who you are, I'm like, where do I start? That's what it's like. A very difficult question, right?
I really think the essence of who I am is I see myself as a connector. That's how I describe myself. By that I mean, in every space that I find myself, I'm always looking for opportunities to link people up. I always say that I'm really good at identifying threads that most people don't. In fact, I was writing something around my experience. So I could have a conversation with you, Tipela, and not necessarily find, you know, something for us to work on at that point. But you can trust me that the next time I have a conversation with somebody else, you'd be the first person if, you know, they're looking for a specific need that you can meet. I really believe that that's how humans are, just from a philosophical aspect. I really believe that that's how humans are intended to be. But for me, I see it as a superpower. I see it as a purpose. I see it as a calling. And I use that in my work as well. So that's how I describe myself as a connector. I'm very passionate about women and inclusion of women in every sphere. You know, I really am one of those who roots for women to be included in every single aspect of the economy, especially because that's an area that they haven't had access to. And lastly, you know, business has always been in my blood. I remember my first experience because somebody was asking me, well, does business run in your family? Interesting enough, I remember when I was on campus, we were doing, and there was a question raised around, what is a bad debt? And I was sitting with, you know, like 500 or so people, and nobody knew what a bad debt is.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, I was like, okay, cool. But, you know, I can understand because it was, so, you know, I had done business prior to, you know, joining university.
Yeah.
So I did have some, you know, business acumen as well as, actually, it was a question around credit worthy. How does a bank determine an individual's credit worthiness?
Mm.
So what is credit worthiness? I think that was the question.
Mm.
And I raised my hand up. I never used to. I raised my hand up and I responded to that question.
Yeah.
And I remember my lecturer said, okay, see me after the class. I thought, okay, here we go.
Yeah.
And then after that, he actually asked me, would you like to take on a couple of sessions for me?
Oh,
I was like,
wow.
No.
Okay.
I mean, that is your job.
Yeah.
But anyway, I took the challenge. Again, I suppose that speaks to who I am. I took up the challenge and I went ahead and you know, took my the rest of my cohort through a session on something. I don't remember what it was, but I know I prepared. So just that, I think, has instilled a sense of, you know, entrepreneurship. I started my own business, which is what I don't mention on my bio. I've been able to start my own things. My thing has always been don't be afraid to start because a lot of us are waiting to be perfect before you know, you put out what you want to put out. Just try, go out in the market and you'll be surprised. You'll find your own tribe.
That's true. You know, we're speaking to Lebogang Mashego just now, and she's also been in this space of small business development for some time. And that question that she, we asked her was, you know, any last words? And she said exactly what you're saying, that, you know, start. That's the best advice you can give to entrepreneurs. Start. Because I think there's a bit of a fear that, you know, we have individually around starting our own businesses. Perhaps we don't know where to start and all those sort of stuff. But I'm quite happy to hear that. And I thought to myself, it is a topic that we need to really unpack at some stage, you know, the starting part. How can we start and all that and all that. And I think, hint, hint, I'm just hinting to you, we might need you for session two on that one.
You know, specifically. To go through the failures and the joys and, you know, the highlights of the entire starting process.
Exactly. I think we need to just unpack that, and maybe it's something that we will talk to you about. I did ask her the same question as well. I think I wanted to ask you as well. When we talk about a small business, maybe even looking at it from the African continent as well, from your own experience, who are we talking about?
Mm-hmm. I think I found that question quite interesting because there's actually very little distinction between an entrepreneur as well as a small business.
Yeah.
But essentially, the two things that you would be looking at in any business, you'd be looking at the revenue, right?
Okay.
Where does that particular company lie, right? So if you're talking about revenue, you're also talking about the number of employees.
Okay.
And that's generally how even the government in South Africa would be describing a small business versus what a medium business is.
Yeah.
So for a small business, it would be ideally people, you would be looking at employees between 10 to 49,
okay.
You know? And then for a medium, you'd be looking at between 50 and 200.
Yeah.
Now, all of them don't necessarily meet this bog standard definition.
Yeah.
And that's why it's an extended definition. In fact, there's been a revision. Before we were talking about, I think there was a small, medium, there was another M that was added to it, and we keep revising this as business complexities. You know, businesses are also very complex in nature, and we are learning, I think, across the entire you know, Pan-African and even African context, we're always learning and redefining what business looks like, what entrepreneurship looks like, what makes an entrepreneur, what is entrepreneurship, what do I need in order to become or qualify as an entrepreneur. So it's something that's constantly growing. I don't think entrepreneurs or even business people need to necessarily worry about where they fall. I think the major thing is look at your revenue. Are you between, you know, under 5 million? Most small businesses, I'll start with micro enterprises. Mm. Micro enterprises would generally lie between actually under 500,000.
Yeah.
So any business under 500,000 revenue would lie under a micro enterprise. And most of those are survivalist businesses.
Mm.
And I'm quite passionate. Personally, I'm passionate about survivalist businesses.
Yeah.
Because these are people who literally rely on these businesses for their bread and butter.
Yes.
Right. So the passion and what they put into their businesses is so different from somebody who's got a bigger business and they have the latitude of exploring other things. So those guys have a safety net of some sort. You know, their revenue bracket is also impressive. They've got a bunch of employees working with them, so they're able to take on more risks. But somebody who, you know, looks at this business as their bread and butter, trust you me, the passion that they have and the drive to make this thing succeed is beyond.
Mm. And I'm exactly thinking now, as you speak about that, it could be our mothers and fathers that are at the corner there, selling vegetables, selling fruits, or whatever the case might be. It might be a small little puzzle shop somewhere in Kenya or Nairobi, sitting there selling convenience stuff that maybe people in the community need. Because I think there's a there's also a problem of spatial planning quite a lot in the African continent, where you find that a lot of the things that that people need are spatially very far, and as such, it creates an opportunity for, I suppose, those ones that can spot the gap in terms of the traveling, and then they open their small businesses. So those will be like your survivalist SMMEs.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
And I really think, you know, just to add to your point, I really think, as much as we talk about localization, I really want to see, you know, what that actually looks like tangibly. I think COVID has opened our eyes as Africa generally to seeing that you can't always depend on the West for, you know, PPEs or whatever you need. It's time for us to actually look at what can we manufacture locally. So if, you know, another pandemic happens or another catastrophic event happens, we actually have capacity within our countries, within our localities to produce what's needed.
So that's very true. Back to, you know, you mentioned how evolving small businesses are. You know, we used to call them SMMEs. I think now it's called, they are called MSME. I'm like, when did it change now? When did it become MSMEs and all those sort of stuff? But now I'm interested in this, your passion, like you mentioned, within the survivalist businesses, 500,000 and less and all those sort of stuff. What are some of the challenges that are faced by, I suppose, survivalist SMMEs?
Oh, I think the first one that comes to mind is obviously finance.
Yeah.
I think, you know, even as a country, as a people, we've always viewed capital, and let me just be specific, as very traditional, right? So how do I start a business? Where do I go and get the money? The concept of bootstrapping a business is something that we need to actually glorify. You know, we do talk about, I think sometimes we forget, when you talk about big business, you forget that some people actually started by bootstrapping their businesses. It's that mama saying, you know what, this week I'm not going to spend R100 or whatever. I'll invest that R100 into buying stock. Right. So I think it's an understanding of what capital looks like, how you can bootstrap your business, as well as other things that are available. So if you look at more high-tech businesses, the issue that I have mostly is I think we push entrepreneurs and smaller businesses into this traditional way of thinking where it's always debt financing. And for me, I feel like that's one thing that's killing survivalist businesses, or just micro-entrepreneurs, or just small businesses generally, where people always think about debt financing. And, you know, with the complexities of running a business, you know, sometimes you'll buy stock and you'll not be able to churn it out as fast as you thought. So here you are, you're stuck with really... you have all kinds of debtors coming at you. So I think it's the whole understanding of really the capital. There's also the access to it. So it's understanding, what do I need? What kind of capital do I need for my business? What kind of financing do I need? The other thing is, where do I get it? Right. So access is also an issue. And even when we've got really great government initiatives, sometimes what we forget, and for me that's a missing middle, we forget that there's a lot of hoops that we introduce in the system that disenfranchise the same people that we're trying to support. Interesting enough, during COVID, what we found is, so there were all these great initiatives, and we found the theme across the rest of Africa. So it was not necessarily a South African issue, but banks had come up with all those kinds of rebates and tax holidays and what kinds of, you know, whatever, you know, schemes they were working on. Governments had done the same thing. And then it came to, okay, implementation. Now, a lot of people were disenfranchised. They were actually excluded from the system because they're not registered, or they don't have financial for specific financial year. I mean, at that point, they were probably not making any money. So things like that, the hopes that we introduced into even making this finance accessible become such a stumbling block for people. So I think that's one of the issues when you talk about micro-enterprises. It's just, oh, I have to bootstrap my business, or I need to understand what kind of financing I need. And then another element is really knowledge, right? Something I really believe in is, you need to have tools. You need to have a way of managing your business. You know, something that we normally say is simple things like how much is coming into my business, your simple income and expenditure, spreadsheet, what does that look like? So skills are really important if you want to grow your businesses. Remember, the aim of the survivalist business is to also grow, right? Nobody wants to remain small. If you've got a father shop, you want to expand into a supermarket. Who doesn't want that? Everybody has that vision.
Yeah.
But to get there, you need to understand small principles, small things that you need to inculcate in your businesses. I've seen, with the businesses that we work with and I've worked with, is it's really introducing principles and really simple things that are applicable and easy to replicate in a business, whether it's just customer care, simple things, call a customer, find out how they're doing, simple things that they can introduce, practices that will help them. Skills are really important. And of course, the big thing that I have with most micro enterprises and what I feel is being stifled, that they're stifling the growth of these businesses, it's just the access to markets, right? When I want to start my puzzle shop, where I want to start it, now there's a big business that's just going to open next door. You know, what does that do? Case in point, in an area I live in, I just saw there used to be a bottle store and a car wash that I used to go to. So the other day I go to the car wash and thought, the car wash had to move. Why? Because the bigger business has bought the area that they want to develop. So this bottle store owner has to move. That's a small business that's already been stifled by a bigger business. Now, what would a bigger business, and I'm not blaming bigger businesses for small businesses, issues and struggles that they face, but I feel there could have been an opportunity there to either give them access to the value chain of the spot. And when we do it, we need to be genuine. We saw it when Pick and Pay introduced this puzzle shop idea and how it went array and things like that. I really think that, when we do this great initiative to give people access to our value chain or procurement or whatever it is, we really need to be genuine about it and also think about it from a humanistic perspective as well as what makes business sense at the end of the day.
Sure. So that's very, very important. I'm actually thinking about this access to markets because a lot of, I suppose, MSMEs or SMMEs, if you like, they might have a great idea, well-polished, well-researched, nice business plan. And maybe even at some point, like you said, with bootstrapping, you try and get finance, a little bit of finance from your friends, from family and all, and then you start. But if you have no access to markets and there's no company that's willing to give you a chance to prove yourself, either maybe even if it's just a once-off order or maybe a year contract to prove yourself, it becomes a very, very difficult to grow your business because no one wants to run a small business or a survivalist business forever and ever. So there seems to be a need for us to look into that. I'm actually reminded of a case in point as well in Soweto. I'm sure a lot of people do know Soweto, where previously, before Maponya Mall was there, right? You'd find that a lot of businesses that were there were running. But when Maponya Mall came through, and of course, we are not saying there's nothing wrong. We're not saying there's something wrong with opening a mall in Maponya Mall. But what it does is it almost has a trickling effect on the small businesses that were surviving there. And like you're saying, perhaps we need to talk about how then big business opens up opportunities to those small businesses, especially in an environment where their presence is envisaged to affect small businesses.
Absolutely, yeah. I really think there's an opportunity for value share. And I've seen it with, bigger corporations that I've had conversations with where they've decided instead of competing with smaller businesses, because their issue, they identified their issue was innovating and not quite innovating as fast just because of the bureaucracy that exists and just because they're huge businesses. So what they've decided to do, and I'm not going to name them, but they're really big in terms of what they do, but they've decided to use smaller businesses as innovation hubs of some sort. So they do angel investing into these companies to help them. So they're like their innovators. So let's try this idea. And of course, the agreement is in such a way that it also protects the small businesses' propriety. Because there's no use of, this business comes up with this innovation and all of a sudden big business has bought it, so this guys have nothing, right? So the structure is in such a way that they are supporting through angel investing, particular businesses, smaller businesses, because they're able to innovate, they're able to test you know, the MVPs, very fast churn out ideas. And once something works, there's an agreement in terms of what that's going to look like. So if the business ends up adopting this particular innovation or improvement, then this small business is still, you know, getting support. They will still get a bit, you know, some financial support when the product goes to market, and also acknowledgement. So there's opportunity to look at what value share looks like and real genuine care for, you know, wanting better in terms of our country. I think we all understand that we are in a position where we can't expect, you know, government to do anything, right? And by anything, I mean, government is limited in terms of the resources and in terms of how much they can do. So it calls on the private sector and also participation of smaller businesses to tackle our issues of unemployment, whether you're talking about women inclusion in the economy. It really is an element of small businesses. But the private sector and the small business sector cannot do it alone. That's why there needs to be a collaborative effort between the two. So what can we get from the small businesses that we don't have? How can we support them? Do they need a financial injection? How do we simplify the process for them?
I think we have a lot of talk shops that talk about, you know, how big business needs to support small business, but we're not seeing big business coming to the fore in terms of doing that, because all these nice conferences that we have, sometimes funded by our own governments, but in terms of implementation, there isn't implementation on the ground. And I suppose corporates that then start these big businesses into areas and communities where previously ran by small businesses, they get affected on that. So maybe it's something like you're saying, that we really need to look at collaboration between big business and small business as we grow this country. There is obviously an argument that, you know, if you look at most countries, specifically even within the African continent itself, much of the growth from an employment point of view, and of course from the economy in terms of the GDP, is led and driven by small businesses. So that collaboration is important, because they are the biggest employers at the end of the day.
You know, when I think about Rwanda, for instance, I know they're really pushing for a bill to support the hustle economy, or the, basically, I think that's what they called it. I might be paraphrasing. But again, it's when a government takes entrepreneurship so seriously that they want to simplify. And I've looked at the bill on entrepreneurship. It really is something super simple in terms of those things that they've spoken about, but how they're going to be implemented. I think it's time for us, even as individuals, you know, when you think about what can I do, well, support the business next to your house. Yet still go to the bigger businesses that you fund, but also support the small business. So if we are doing small things like that, I feel like we are, you know, somewhat contributing to a wave of change in the localization that we so desperately need. I think there's just a lot that we can do.
I actually saw a meme on social media a couple of months ago. It must have been the beginning of this year. And in the meme, you know, they were showing how, for instance, when you buy from a small business, like you said, the business next door, you're supporting not just the entrepreneur, but the entrepreneur is supporting 5, 6, 7 other people behind him or her. So just by buying that one little item that might cost a few couple of rands or whatever the case might be, you're actually feeding not only the entrepreneur, but also the people that are depending on him. And it goes back to that concept that you talk about, the survivalist businesses that make less than 500,000, for instance. So that's something we really need to look at. And that's what I'm saying. I think we're going to bring you back for that conversation, because it is a very important one, coupled with the finance discussion, you know, how to get finance within the South African and broader African context as well. Now, I want to go back to bootstrapping, because I think you're raising a very important point there. And yesterday I had a guest from Girlcode. I'm sure you know Mrs. Mkwanas. She was talking about how when she started Girlcode, which is a business, of course, that focuses on IT programming and coding for women specifically, which is something I advocate for, 100% emancipation of women in business especially is very, very important. So she was talking about how she bootstrapped her own business for 3 years, you know. And she was running it on the side for 3 years until it became something that she can't run on the side anymore, right? And it now became a business that needed her full attention. Now, I was thinking, as you're speaking about bootstrapping as well, to say, I think COVID has taught us that we need to look at, for instance, side hustles that we can start on the side, because we don't know what might happen. You might wake up tomorrow and might lose your job. And the question then becomes, how do you survive from there? So I thought, let me ask this one. How important are they? Side hustles on the side, and also bootstrapping as you build your own way into your own future.
Wow, that's a good question because I feel like I've been there for a majority of my
Yeah.
entrepreneurship life. I've always, so talking about fear, I've always felt I want to get my business
Yeah.
somewhere before I can fully commit to it. But in answering your question, bootstrapping is really important. It's overrated. And I've had conversations with people, and especially, people who provide support, financial support, angel investors, and the like. So what we found is a lot of people always ask, well, I need funding. And the first thing they think about is, let me go and borrow. Once you get into debt financing, you will have such difficult challenges to ever get out of that. And a huge majority of your expenditure is always going to be servicing that debt. So coming back to bootstrapping and growing organically, because that's something that we don't speak about. Everybody wants to see their business grow like tremendously within the first year. Now, the truth is it doesn't actually happen that way. In fact, businesses fail within the first 2 years of formation just because of so many things, whether it's capital or it's just you hired the wrong people or you tested you didn't quite calculate what your what the uptake was going to be on your product offering or service offering. So there's a lot of reasons why businesses would fail. However, most people jump into, I want to grow my business, instead of doing it organically. And by organically, I mean you make that income, reinvest it, right? Now, a lot of people get overzealous and they want to move to the next level as fast as they can. Of course, you're going to get a couple of millions in. But if your company is not capacitated enough, whether from a skills perspective, from a product or servicing perspective, from an understanding of your market, that access to market that we were talking about, you can have as many millions and actually put them into trying to push this out and end up failing. So the concept of bootstrapping is basically looking at what do I have? Who do I know? There's a lady who runs who started the first ever Kenyan running shoe. It's called Kenda. And it's really opportune because Kenya is full of runners. Yet we didn't have our own shoes. So all our runners, and this was the idea behind her brand when I had an opportunity to speak to her. So she was talking about how Kenya has this amazing runners who go and still have to go get Nikes and all these other brands to support them, which was pretty interesting for a country that has the highest performance. So why can't we produce something in-house? Now, she started a side hustle. She started, first of all, investigating the idea. So the concept phase happened while she was still employed. Then she thought, okay, cool. So she tested with a couple of athletes. Would you be interested in this kind of product? Let's see what your Nike looks like. What is missing? What would you like? Can you run in high altitude with this? Would this work for you? Once she was confident that she had something in terms of a concept that she could sell, she didn't go to a bank. She didn't go to, an angel investor or whatever funding that's out there. She went to her family, right? Because your family will be the most difficult to convince. But again, those are the people that they're going to be your greatest critics, but those are the same people who are going to be shareholders. So she went to her family and friends and said, this is the concept. What do you guys think? Critique it. And this is how much I need to start it, right? And eventually her business has grown. Now she's attracted other investors that she didn't even reach out to. She started literally by bootstrapping, by asking friends and family, by committing her salary to this idea because she believed so much in it. And now it's grown into a very big brand in Kenya and in the world now. So we can't really, I think we don't, we can't overemphasize the importance of bootstrapping. And just answering your question in terms of side hustles, oh my goodness. I think with the cost of living, even before we think about anything else, it's becoming impossible not to have a side
A
hustle
side
or
hustle,
something else. I am a believer of diversified income streams. If there's anything that I really believe any young person or anyone needs to invest in, is looking at what are my sources of income? What do I need to invest in that at the end of the year or at the end of the month, if I lost this particular source, I would still be okay? I think we need to start thinking about things that way. But I really believe having a side hustle is becoming a staple. It's becoming normal to do two or three things. The challenge is always just, I really believe in being able to be quite smart about how you manage yourself and your energy. Entrepreneurship is when you start something while you're still working, right? So it's important to still be able to do your normal And most companies will be worried about that. Are you really able to deliver on what you need to do and ensure that there's no conflict? Again, that needs a lot of, I would say, integrity as a person to ensure that you're not in any way, you know, diluting the part, the line between, blurring the lines, rather, between your day job and the things that you do on the side. So a lot of really smart scheduling and being very ethical and integrous in what you do.
Yeah.
And again, you know, with side hustles, start small.
Yeah.
You know, look for the hobby. I always tell people, if you start with something that you're passionate about, trust in me, there's somebody else. You will find your tribe. Look for the gap within the market. There will be somebody who's interested in what you are, you know, solving for. If you're solving for, you've realized, well, there's load shedding, people have nowhere to go.
Yeah.
And you found a way of us cost sharing by being in one space or something. You know, whatever innovation you come up with, there will be people who believe in it, but are you passionate about it?
Yeah.
So that's what you're selling.
Yeah.
You know, when I come to you, I'm selling my passion for my product. And if I'm not passionate about it, I started it because everybody else was starting it, it doesn't work. And, and I saw that in tennis sometimes. I can use Kenya as an example because I'm from there.
Yeah.
So sometimes, you know, you'll see everybody get into poultry. Poultry rearing, because all of a sudden there's big demand, right? So all of us are doing the same thing, but are you really passionate about it? No. So obviously the demand outweighs the supply at that point outweighs the demand. Then again, people start saying, well, I failed, I started this, I failed. But did you actually look at what that looked like? Were you just doing the business because everybody was doing? So what are you passionate about? What is that thing, whether it's a hobby, whatever it is, whether it's tutoring children, you enjoy learning, you enjoy, start that. And start small. Don't be afraid of starting with one or two people. I always say it's better to start with two people who are committed to you, who believe in what you're doing, than getting 100 who you have to convince.
Yeah, I was actually thinking about bootstrapping using your friends and families. Those are the most difficult to convince, because they almost like know you there since you were born, in a way. And they're like, nah, this is not going to work. But I think, like Lebu said, it's about grit, you know, it's about believing, like you said as well, in your idea and what it aims to do, because that's very, very important. They will catch up as time goes on. In fact, I know of a lady who started her own business, and no support whatsoever, even financially, from friends and family. But now into its third year, it's growing in such a way that family is now like, okay, now we see what you're doing. And, you know, friends and family are now starting to understand the concept. But I suppose it talks to exactly that, someone saying that, you know, entrepreneurs are extraordinary people. They see opportunities where the rest of us see trouble and problems and all that, you know. We're complaining about load shedding, for instance, here in South Africa, which is an interesting South African phenomenon. But we complain about it, but there are people who are looking at opportunities and all that. So I was thinking, and maybe this is my next question, what are some of the myths about small businesses? You know, there's always this thing that small businesses are lazy, they want handouts, small businesses are people who are just troublesome in nature. So what are some of the myths? And maybe we need to debunk these myths as well.
I think you're very right when you talk about people seeing entrepreneurs and just maybe small businesses as a battle. Maybe it's a platform for rebels who don't fit anywhere, misfits who do not want to be told what to do in the workplace. I don't think that's what it is. I really believe that entrepreneurs are visionaries, and sometimes the vision sometimes is not realistic to other people, and that's okay, and that's what makes a different you know, caliber of person, right? You need to identify something and see it in a way and convince other people. You know, people will see opportunities where we never thought there were, you know. You know, when you think about when the pandemic started and everybody was buying sanitizers. Somebody decided, I always find this so interesting whenever I walk into a retail store and I see, oh, now we've realized we don't need people. Remember when we started, you used to have somebody at the door who would spray your hands. And now we've got into, oh, there's actually an automated thingy that you just put your hand in. You don't mind your own business. You can, you know, things like that. Somebody actually sat down and thought, oh, wow, okay, cool, there's a problem.
Yes.
I can solve it.
Yes.
And I'm sure when they were solving that problem, somebody else was thinking, but why? Why are you thinking about that? So I really think the fact that they're visionaries, the fact that they're different, they're what we call rebel leaders.
Yeah.
The people who look at things differently. I think they're originals. I think there's a writer who refers to them as the originals, people who question things.
Yeah.
They question the status quo, and I totally love it. I'm the person who's going to ask you why. It has always been done this way. Well, have we tried another way? So that's what entrepreneurs are. I really see them as people who are risk takers. Sometimes they take a risk and fail, but they have the grit that you were talking about, where they're like, okay, cool, I'll start another business. I'll start something new. I think there's a lot of people who, and really high profile people who've spoken about the experiences where they failed. And that's what entrepreneurship is about. It's about the grit, and it's about being able to bounce back from failure and saying, okay, cool, this didn't actually work for that market. Let me test out something else. So, yeah, there's a lot of, you know, myths that we can talk about in terms of entrepreneurs and, I think most of them are just the fact that we've seen entrepreneurs are seen as just hard-headed humans who just want to do things at their own time. Yeah, to some extent, yes, but I don't think that's a driving force behind entrepreneurship. I really think they're problem solvers. I really think they're people who look at their society and see, well, I could solve for that particular challenge.
And I think that's a skill on its own, finding out and looking at the communities where you are and finding out what the problems are. And I suppose it's an even bigger skill to try and then come up with a solution to that. And it talks to exactly that maybe they are a little bit different to just you and I, for instance, who are not entrepreneurs and all that. Because that on its own is a skill that is definitely needed. You look at most of these leading entrepreneurs, even the ones that are late, your Steve Jobs, for instance, they were labeled as rebels and people who are just not, you know, your average person. And so today we are still using their products that they came up with, you know, from sounding a little bit like bananas to actually having products that everyone, almost everyone in the world actually wants to use. So I thought it would be also important to ask this question. Are there any type of resources that are needed for one to, I suppose, start their own business or acquire a business?
Yeah. That's a good question. I really think really knowing, the reason why I really think skills are important is just knowing what problem you're trying to solve. You know, it's great to have the passion to start a business, but you need to identify what problem are you trying to solve. So that's, for me, it's a starting point. And then the second point is, who do you need to bring this to fruition? Most of the time I have qualms with small businesses when we are trying to solve something somebody else has already started. My point is always, can you speak to them? And we need to learn how to collaborate and add value to each other. Right. So if somebody has already started something, they've already done the MVP, they've already done the market testing, they're confident about what they're doing. Instead of you reinventing the wheel, it's looking for a better way to provide that. So that's the innovation behind it. So I think entrepreneurs also need to learn how to collaborate, learn from others, listen to other people's stories, and you know, ask questions. Always be the why, how about this? You know, that's the whole concept around design thinking. You know, always thinking about how can we do this better? How can we simplify people's lives? I really think if you're starting from that point, then you would have a successful business. So have the skills, surround yourself with the right people. It's always been argued that entrepreneurs don't make the best leaders. Which is true, because they're very vision-driven, and sometimes they don't look at the reality. I want to open a branch here, I want to open a branch there, but there needs to be somebody who's going to say, so realistically, financially speaking, we're not able to do that today. So it's somebody who grounds you back as much as you're visionary, and you should be allowed to be the risk taker, the person who thinks big picture, but you also need people around you who are leaders, people who will give you sound advice and tell you, I don't think that's the right move. I don't think this is good. You know, people like that, I think, will help you grow your business. And of course, just understand what's out there in terms of support. You know, is there something that you can tap into? There's a lot of funding that's coming into the small business sector, whether from corporates or public sector. I think it's time that we knew what's available to a point where we could question when we don't receive it, right? when it's out there and nobody's saying anything in terms of, you know, questioning, why am I not getting this? Why are we not doing this? If we become advocates for our own sector, instead of people always looking at us like a shame, somebody else, somebody needs to help them. You know, if we become very strong, even as Black business people, you know, we speak up, and I'm glad that that happens in South Africa. It just needs to happen more often. We need to have a voice around these rooms where decisions are being made about us. When people are talking about creating an enabling environment for the SME sector to prosper, we need to be giving solutions to that. We don't need, you know, professors who've never run a business. No offense to any professor listening tonight. But we don't need all these experts to sit around the room and debate, you know, what needs to happen in the SME sector. We need the SME sector to be part of this conversation. We need to sit around the table and actually present viable options.
Certainly. Is there a role that you think governments across Africa, for instance, need to play? I suppose in order to support small businesses or even people who have business ideas, we hear of, for instance, how in the Western world, it's actually easy to acquire finance if you've got a business idea. And it's a little bit difficult this side because the governments aren't exactly supportive of or supposed don't want to take the risk to support small businesses. So, is there a role for small for governments?
Absolutely. And the president actually did mention this, and I really thought that was great. In one of his speeches, it must have been early in the year when he was talking about government creating an enabling environment for businesses to thrive. And for me, that's eliminating the many stumbling blocks that small businesses have, whether it's an accessing market where you're being told, well, in order for you to belong to this value chain, you need to have X, Y, Z in order, when you don't even have, you know, an auditor who's going to audit your financials. You're still doing your own statements. You're still drawing up an Excel spreadsheet of your income. So it's looking at tangible things like that. You know, how else can we eliminate stumbling blocks for SMEs? And also looking at how they can, in a way, advocate for SMEs when it comes to collaboration with the private sector, bigger businesses, if you think about it. You know, we need to also have some support. Are there rebates that we can give? Are we, as a government and as governments, willing to outlay some financial support, whether it's to women, where there are no strings attached? You know, what I find interesting is, we want to support the sector, yet we give out the funding is always with so many strings attached to a point where a business will just say, you know what, thank you, but no thanks. It's so difficult to jump through the hoops. It's so difficult to implement whatever you're supposed to implement because of the indicators which are beyond what you can service as a business. So I really think it's time, and it's probably time for us to stop creating all these great policies. Policies are great on paper. It's great that we have all this great speak about how entrepreneurship is the future. We actually need to start looking at the complexities. When we say that we're giving access to market, what does that actually look like? Are we creating an avenue where a small business can actually engage with a big business and understand, how do I get into your value chain? Are there things that I need to do? And if there are things that I need to do, who can provide me with that support so that I am geared, I am opportunity ready?
Very, very important. Sure. I think it's a very important topic and discussion we've had. Certainly one that I think is only a precursor. And we need to have sort of like a series on this and unpack these topics, which are very, very important as we build the SME or MSME space within not only the South African context, but also the African continent to drive, I suppose, growth and innovation in this space so that at least as Africa, we are not left behind in the conversation, especially around tech and innovation and all those sort of stuff. Any last words for our listeners?
Essentially, just play into your strengths, whatever your strengths are. Find them, play into them. If you're a woman, play into the community. Find out what you can do. And when I say that, use that as a superpower, whether you're negotiating, whatever state you find yourself in business. And if you're starting a small business or you are not sure whether to start a side hustle, whatever you're thinking about in the entrepreneurship sector, start. You will find your tribe.
Indeed. Thank you so much, ma'am. Really appreciate the time that you've taken to join us. Please, when I say hint next time, please don't block me. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it, ma'am.
All right.
All right then.
Adventist World Radio, SID Media. We are not general practitioners. We are specialists in Bible-based content.